ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नमने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पाश्चात्यदेश तरणे Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudevi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Scandal Chapter 3 Verse 32 Dasyo Utrishta Janapada Veda Pashanda Dushita Rajanas Cha Praja Baksha Shishnodhara Para Vija Dasu Krishna Janapada Veda Pashanda Dushita Rajanas Cha Praja Baksha Shishno Dara Paradvija Dasu Krishna, predominated by thieves, Janapada, populated places, Veda, Vedic scriptures, Pasanda, by atheists, Dushita, contaminated, Rajana, political leaders, Cha and Praja Baksha, consuming the populace, Shishodara, by the genitals and belly, Para, dedicated, Dvija, Brahmanas. Translation, cities will be dominated by thieves, the Vedas will be contaminated by speculative interpretations of atheists. Political leaders will virtually consume the citizens, and the so-called priests and intellectuals will be devotees of their bellies and genitals. For report, many large cities are unsafe at night. For example, it is understood that no sane person will walk in New York City Central Park at night because he knows he will almost certainly be mugged. Apart from ordinary thieves who abound in this age, large cities are filled with cutthroat businessmen who enthusiastically convince people to purchase and consume useless or even harmful products. It has been well documented that beef, tobacco, liquor, and many other modern products destroy one's physical health, what to speak of mental health, and yet modern capitalists do not hesitate to use these every psychological trick in the book to convince people to consume these things. Modern cities are full of mental and atmospheric pollution, and even ordinary citizens are finding them unbearable. This verse also points out that the teachings of the Vedic scriptures will be distorted in this age. Great universities teach courses on Hinduism in which Indian religion, despite limitless evidence to the contrary, is described as polytheistic and leading to an impersonal salvation. In fact, all Vedic literature is a unifying whole, as stated by Lord Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita, Vedasya Sarvai Aham Eva Vedya. By all the Vedas, I, Krishna, am to be known. All Vedic literature is meant for enlightening us about the Supreme Personal Absolute Truth, Vishnu or Krishna. Although known by many names and appearing in many forms, God is a single absolute entity, and he is a person. But this true Vedic understanding is hidden in Kali Yuga. In this verse, Sukadeva astutely observes that political leaders will virtually consume the citizens, and so-called priests and intellectuals will be devotees of the bellies and genitals. How sadly true this statement is. Translation, cities will be dominated by thieves, and Vedas will be contaminated by speculative interpretations of atheists. Political leaders will virtually consume the citizens, and so-called priests and intellectuals will be devotees of their bellies and genitals. So this is describing the corrupt situation in Kali Yuga. So if we compare this situation with previous ages, we'll see the true standards of the population and the cities and the political leaders. So, in the Vedic city, because the Kshatriya has control, thieves and criminals are not allowed to function. We see how Parikshit was touring his kingdom, and when he saw Kali there, then immediately he banned him from his kingdom. That was the only criminal there. And he banned him. So, the Kshatriya should control this. We see in the case of when, just before Prithu was born and enthroned, there was a time when there was no king. That was in Swayambhuva Manvantara, when they happened to kill, the priests killed Vena because he was so unqualified as a king, because he was very cruel. And when there was no king, then the thieves became prominent everywhere. And then when they put Prithu in charge, then again, the situation was corrected. So there has to be a very strong political system to control corruption. This is so particularly in Kali Yuga. As we go backwards towards Satya Yuga, because the people are, in general, have a sattvic nature, there's less need to control them with force. Whereas in Kali Yuga, tamogun predominates. That was described in the previous verses. It described how the people of Kali Yuga will be ignorant and lazy and cheating, etc. So the quality of the majority of the people will be tamogun. And this leads to a lot of corrupt, violent criminal practices in the U.S. Somebody controls them. So, a correct political system would have to put strong control over the people in Kali Yuga. Unfortunately, we see that's not so, because here it describes that the political leaders and the kings, what are they doing? They are not so much interested in controlling and putting order in the population as their Pacha Paksha, which means they like to eat the citizens. This is not literal, but what it means is they want to exploit everybody. They don't want to protect them and keep order, but they want to exploit everybody in this system because they want to have power, they want to have money, etc. So they will utilize the ignorant population for their own purposes. This is very easy to do in one sense because the people are in tamagun, majority of the people. So you can fool them. You can do all sorts of things and they won't care. You can fool people because they're ignorant. So the population in Kali Yuga is particularly ignorant. In general, a society will have a large degree of tamagun people and sudras. In Kali Yuga, that's even more prominent because the tamagun is so prominent. So, very easy, if there's some few intelligent people, they can really exploit and fool the population in general. For their own purposes. In other words, prajabaksha means they do not act for the benefit of the citizens, but rather to exploit them for their own purposes. So the correct political leader, the proper political leader, will actually protect the citizens. That is the meaning of kshatriya, one who protects others, not one who exploits others. So a real king has to extend protection to all. So he enforces order so that the thieves and the dacoits don't rule and become strong. And he sets up a system of justice so that the citizens cannot be exploited by other people. But if the king is corrupt or the political leader is corrupt, then there is no proper system to prevent the exploitation of the common citizens. So therefore, rather they enjoy doing this, they enjoy exploiting everybody. So this is the nature of the political leaders in Kali Yuga. So the kings are bad, the technical head is the Brahmana. Brahmana gives advice to the king. And the king cannot really exist properly without the Brahmana. A real Kshatriya is not simply Rajagun. He is Rajagun with some sattva. And because of that sattva, he understands the nature of Dharma. And he also gives respect to the Brahmana, who is dominant sattva. So, in Kali Yuga, of course, that's not so. So the political leaders are not real Kshatriyas because they're not a mixture of Rajagun and sattva and trained properly. They don't have any sattva. They're Rajagun and Tamagun. So, on the other hand, the Brahmanas, so-called Brahmanas in Kali Yuga are also not Brahmanas. So here is described that the Dvijas are Shishno Dara Para. They are simply attracted to sexual enjoyment and eating. Which means the Brahmanas are no longer sattvic. The quality of sattvagun is happiness and prakasha, knowledge. Happiness does not mean sense enjoyment. Happiness means contentment. They're content without seeking material enjoyment. In other words, they're detached and they've got their happiness within. And knowledge means, prakasha means, that they understand not the material body, they're atma. So these are the qualities of a real brahmana. But here, it's the opposite. These dvijas are dedicated to enjoying in the material world. They are not detached. They don't understand they're not the body, they're the soul. They think, I am the body and I want to enjoy in the material world. So, the brahmanas are completely corrupted in Kali Yuga. As I said, the dominant mode is tamagun. So it's very difficult for a real brahmana to survive. And so most become influenced and corrupted. And they end up also in rajagun and tamagun, like the others. Therefore, even if a political leader or a king is to respect those brahmanas, it's useless because the brahmanas are corrupted. And they're in the same category as the kshatriyas. They're all corrupt. With no sense of control, no idea of the real goal in life. And the scriptures are corrupted by Pashandas, which means people who don't believe in the Supreme Lord. Could be atheists, could be demigod worshippers or whatever. And sometimes they may proclaim that they are following the Vedas or following scripture. But actually they don't know the conclusion of scripture. So they, in other words, they misinterpret the meaning of the scriptures and come up with a different conclusion. So in Kali Yuga, therefore, the Vedas, the true meaning of the Vedas is not understood. Now, of course, to prevent that, Veda Vyas wrote the Puranas, wrote the Mahabharata and Bhagavad Gita, wrote the Brahma Sutras, and then Narada Muni said, okay, now you write the Bhagavatam. That's the conclusion of everything. This will be the clear statement of what is the meaning of the Vedas, Bhagavatam. Worship Krishna, follow the path of bhakti. Finished. Don't do anything else. He tried to make it clear. That, of course, is the saving grace in Kali Yuga, as it was stated in the first canto. What is the compensation now that Krishna and Dharma have disappeared and Kali Yuga has come, and Pariksit is no longer there to protect us from the influence of Kali and all the adharmic principles of meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, and greed, and hoarding money, etc. What are we to do? So, answer was, Bhagavatam has risen like the sun in Kali Yuga to destroy the darkness. So the main point of Bhagavatam is worship Krishna and perform bhakti yoga. So that is the true meaning of the Vedas. Yet other people in Kali Yuga will get a different meaning. Either they will ignore the Bhagavatam and use the Vedas and other scriptures to propound other theories, or they will reject the Vedas completely and say they're bogus or whatever. Even if they accept Bhagavatam or study it or comment on it, they will explain it differently. So therefore, it's very difficult in Kali Yuga because of the prominence of people in Rajagun and Tamagun who will distort the meaning even of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nevertheless, Bhagavatam is still the hope. So Sukadev has spoken Bhagavatam in such a way that it functions in two ways. And it's compared to Mohini Avatar. So as we all know, Mohini Avatar is the incarnation of the Lord in his feminine feature, woman, a very attractive woman. And Mohini means one who bewilders. So if the Supreme Lord takes the form of a woman, he can really bewilder people because he is so beautiful. So this form has a particular function. When the devatas and the demons were struggling to produce nectar, they exhausted themselves and finally they produced nectar, amrita, from the milk ocean and churning of Vasuki. And then the demons stole the nectar. So the devatas were depressed. What can we do now? Because now if we fight the demons will drink the nectar, and even if they're injured, they will get strong again, their wounds will get healed, and they'll come back fighting strongly, and we'll get defeated. So then Vishnu came and said, "Don't worry, I will rectify the situation." So he appeared as Mohini Avatar. And Mohini is very beautiful. So she was very clever. She simply went to the demons, and as soon as the demons saw Mohini, they were completely bewildered by her beauty and her grace and her words. And so when they saw her, they spoke among themselves, they quarreled among themselves because they became very lusty for her. And then they thought, "What should we do? She's coming towards us. I think she likes us." She's coming closer. So then they discussed and they said, "Okay, whatever she says, we'll do. We want to encourage her." So then Mohini came close, and then they greeted her, and then they said, "What do you want?" And she said, "Give me the nectar." So then, yes, we have to do whatever she says. So they gave her the nectar. Because they trust her so much that she likes us, so we'll give her everything. So they gave her the nectar. And they thought, well, if she likes us so much, she'll give us back the nectar. But she took the nectar and she didn't give it back. She gave the nectar to the devatas. And without fighting, therefore, very cleverly, she defeated the demons simply by bewildering them. So, Bhagavatam is like Mohini. It bewilders the demons. And it gives the nectar to the devatas, or that to the devotees, that is. So, in other words, it bewilders the atheists and the impersonalists and the Pashandis and all the other people. And it gives great sweetness and nectar and the highest truth to the devotees. So yes, it is possible that the Pashandas and all other people will contaminate the meaning of the Bhagavatam. And Sukadeva doesn't mind that. It's the purpose of Bhagavatam. The demons and Pashandas and atheists, etc., they are not qualified to understand. Therefore, let them not understand. So therefore, they can take a different meaning from Bhagavatam if they want. So there are many subjects in Bhagavatam to attract people who don't want Krishna. There's Karma Yoga and Varnashram, there's Gyana, and particularly in the third canto and in the 11th canto, Gyana, how to merge into Brahman is discussed. And there's Astanga Yoga discussed in the third canto and 11th canto, quite in detail again. So all these other systems are there to attract people who don't want bhakti. The real meaning is therefore covered purposely by Sukadeva to prevent unqualified people from offending Krishna. On the other hand, those who are true devotees will understand the purpose of the Bhagavatam, because that is also stated very nicely and clearly in the beginning and the end, and in the middle. So if we actually intelligently go through the Bhagavatam, we will understand what the purport is. That is, as Narada told Vedavyas, you make a word to glorify only Krishna ultimately and tell everyone to simply worship Krishna. That is the purport, the beginning and the end. And of course we know in the 10 topics of Bhagavatam, the final topic is Asraya, shelter of everything. And what's the shelter of everything? Krishna, because he is Swayam Bhagavan. Not only Bhagavan, he is Swayam Bhagavan, which means he is the final form, the most complete form, most inclusive form of Bhagavan. So he's the shelter of everything. Yeah? So it's very clear what the goal of Bhagavatam is, if we read it intelligently as devotees. So, therefore, for the devotees, the Bhagavatam gives the real meaning, that is Krishna, and Krishna is very sweet, so it gives nectar. This is hidden from the demons. They can take another meaning. They will ignore the statements, Krishna is the Bhagavan Swayam. They will give another meaning to that. Okay? They will become attracted to the other topics in the Bhagavatam and think they're more important. Sometimes, for instance, in the 12th canto, there's a statement at the very end of the work in which Sukadev says, "Oh, now I've finished, I've completed the Bhagavatam, Parikshit. Please, now you've understood the truth. After hearing everything, it is time to merge into Brahman." So, yes, therefore the impersonalist will say, "Yes, this is the conclusion of Bhagavatam." Very good. After hearing all about Krishna, then 11th canto, we all got about Jnana, and then in 12th canto, finally, Parikshit tells Sukadeva, merge in Brahman. So therefore, Brahman is higher than Krishna, and this will be their conclusion. So, this of course is contrary to what is stated at the beginning of the Bhagavatam and all through the Bhagavatam, that impersonalism is useless and it is like a drop of water in the desert. The bliss is like nothing compared to the ocean of bliss of bhakti, etc. So completely contrary to the statements in the Bhagavatam. They won't see that. They will simply see this final statement and they'll become joyful. See, Brahman is... So this is a bewilderment for the Pashandis and atheists and impersonalists, etc. Not on purpose. Yep. So, how do the devotees take a verse like that? That looks like it's very impersonal. It comes near the end of the Bhagavatam, in the last words of Sukadeva. Why would he say such a thing? So, intentionally he'll say that thing. But, the devotees will also understand, this is contrary. It must have another meaning. So sometimes, the apparent meaning is not the real meaning for the devotees. So the devotees will have to find another meaning in there. So that's what the Acharyas do. They'll explain another meaning to this verse. That also corresponds to the rest of the Bhagavatam. So in this way, intentionally, Sukadeva hides the meaning so that people who are unqualified will not get the actual sweetness of the Bhagavatam, since they simply offend it. So in this way, the people in Kali Yuga who pretend to be learned can very easily mistake the meaning of Bhagavatam completely. The devotees, on the other hand, are still capable of getting the nectar. Therefore, we should intelligently study the Bhagavatam and hear the Bhagavatam under the guidance of the great Acharyas. And in this way, we will very clearly see the meaning of the Bhagavatam, which is ultimately glorification of Krishna and his sweetness. Though the Kali Yuga is very strong and all these problems are there and people will misinterpret, we do have the mercy of Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the great Acharyas to give us the real meaning of Bhagavatam so it can shine like the sun in Kali Yuga. So this process of bhakti, as I said, is the recommended process in Kali Yuga. It is not jnana, it is not yoga, it is not karma yoga or varnashram. All that is secondary. It cannot be done. So the correction of the system of political corruption here we see with the kings who are devouring the citizens and exploiting them, the brahmanas who are simply after enjoyment in the material world, and the population completely afflicted by thieves and populated by thieves also. Everybody's fighting with each other and stealing from each other. A very bad situation. What is the solution? So we can say, okay, let's make a better government, or let's do this, or let's do that. But according to Bhagavatam, the solution is bhakti. Bhakti is the solution. Not making a new political system, not doing this, not doing that. The real root of everything is bhakti itself. Following bhakti, of course, so many other things can happen. But the main emphasis must be always upon bhakti. So even if we cannot correct the political system, even if there is so much corruption, even if the kings are devouring the citizens, and even if the brahmanas and intellectuals are all sense enjoyers, it doesn't matter. We can still go on with bhakti in spite of that. So bhakti is apratiyata. It is unobstructed. It is unimpeded. It can go on if the society is tamogun. It can go on if it's sattvagun. It can go on any place. It can go on in hellish planets. So the devotees are said to be practicing bhakti in heaven or hell. It doesn't matter. They go on with their devotional service. So that, of course, is also the qualification for getting the mercy of the Lord. One gets the mercy or becomes qualified through the mercy of the Lord is then to die a bhak, a claimant of the Lord's mercy, when he tolerates his situation in the material world. He doesn't complain about the difficulties of Kali Yuga. He understands, I'm in this situation, my previous karmas have done this, and my karmas are due to my activities, not the Supreme Lord's. So he doesn't blame anybody for the difficult situation. He accepts it as his karma, and he accepts that as the mercy of the Lord. And he continues to worship the Supreme Lord of body, mind, and soul. That is his qualification for the mercy of the Lord. So the Lord is pleased when the devotee continues devotional service under all circumstances. He doesn't give regard for the externals or whatever. He sincerely continues his practice in all cases. So that is particularly true in Kali Yuga. The system is environment and political system and association is very bad. It's not like Satya Yuga or even Dwarpa Yuga or Treta Yuga, but if the devotee continues, he gets the mercy of the Lord. As is concluded at the end of the Bhagavatam, the great, though Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, one good quality is chanting the name of the Lord. This is one thing that we need to do, and this will be all benedictions. Okay, any questions? Let's see if anybody's... Probably in the modern world we'll find a few. Now, Prashankar didn't write a commentary, and as far as I know, his descendants, also his Parampara, hasn't written any Bhagavatam commentary as such. So you have a lot of modern people who tend to be impersonalists or devata worship who speak on the Bhagavatam. In South India there are a few. And probably North India also, and many of these Bhagavad Saptaha readers, narrators, are also probably impersonalists. There are devata worshippers or something. They're not preaching pure bhakti to Krishna. All the yugas are always there in the material world. We cannot escape the gunas in any yuga, but in Satya Yuga, Sattva-guna is most prominent. And therefore, Tamaguna, Rajaguna are very, very little. But it's always there. So when we have a Brahmana, for instance, he's prominently Sattva-guna. But he's not pure Sattva-guna. He's got a little Rajaguna, Tamaguna somewhere also that makes it once in a while surface. There's nothing perfect and pure in the material world. It's always a mixture of gunas. Yeah? So even a Tamaguna person is not completely Tamaguna. You got a little Sattva, a little Raja somewhere. So So, from Kali Yuga, yes, dominantly tamagun, but there is a little sattvagun and there is a little bit of rajagun. So, we can say that brahminical qualities will sometimes manifest. And some people will be brahminical, but majority of people are tamagun very strongly. And we'll see it contaminates all of the varnas in the Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. They all become overwhelmed by tamogun attitudes here. Well, the thing is, the sattva-gun itself is not a cause of bhakti. So even if you have a pure sattva-gun society, it's not necessarily a devotional society. It may be very brahminical, and it may be pointed towards moksha, impersonal liberation, it may be there. But sattvic society in itself is not bhakti. We have to make a clear distinction between bhakti and sattva-gun. Jnana is a quality of sattva-gun, and jnana means tendency towards impersonal liberation. So, in one sense, it's good because it's peaceful and good qualities. In bad sense, sattva-gun can lead you into impersonalism also. So, it's not necessarily devotional. Some aspects are favorable for bhakti. But bhakti is actually beyond the gunas. And it can exist in any guna. When any gunas are there, still bhakti can be practiced. So, even if it's tamagun society in Kali Yuga, bhakti is the only process that can be done. Sattva-gun cannot be done. Jnana cannot be done because it requires great sattva to do that. Yoga cannot be done because it requires sattva. But bhakti does not require sattva-gun. It can be done any time. So that's why it is recommended that in Kali Yuga we do bhakti and particularly chant the name Krishna, which is the most powerful aspect of bhakti. So it's independent of the gunas. But we don't want to get sattva-gun. Steadiness. Well, see, the process of bhakti, we shouldn't confuse bhakti with mode of goodness. Because mode of goodness is an impediment to bhakti, ultimately. If you want to go to the spiritual world, you can't take sattva-gun with you. It's a mode of goodness, which is part of matter. So we have to rise above sattva-gun as well as rajagun and tamagun. As is said in Bhagavad Gita. Of course, Krishna says, of the guna, sattva-gun is better, because in sattva-gun you like to practice dharma and do so many things, but it is also a cause of bondage in the material world. So you have to rise above all three gunas, nistra-guna above arjuna, even above sattva-gun. So our aim should not be to cultivate sattva-gun. If we do, we get caught back in the material world, and maybe we go to Sargaloka or something as a result of that. So, now, in bhakti, there are also qualities, but we should not confuse those qualities with sattvic qualities. Or the activities are there in bhakti, which look like sattva-gun activities, but they're not. Those are spiritual activities, not sattvic activities. and spiritual qualities. Just as Krishna has so many wonderful qualities like generosity, compassion. We say, oh, that's sattva-guna. No, it's not. Krishna's qualities are all transcendental. Similarly, devotees can develop wonderful qualities. Those qualities are not sattva qualities. Those are spiritual qualities. By association with Krishna, we also develop spiritual qualities. So the activities we do, like the activities of bhakti, they're all spiritual, nirguna, beyond the goodness. Secondary activities are not bhakti as such, like waking up early in the morning, bathing, whatever. So we can call them secondary devotional activities which support the bhakti. So they are also in the varnashram system, and they're sattvic in nature, and they produce sattva there. They don't produce sattva for the devotees because they're simply helping bhakti. So they're attached to the bhakti process, so therefore they don't give sattva guna results there. They give us also transcendental results because they're supporting the bhakti, which rises, helps us rise above the gunas. That's the conclusion of Bhagavatam, yeah. What is the explanation? The explanation is actually Sukadev is joking. So when Parikshit replies to that, he gets angry. He says, no, this is not the right, this is not the conclusion. So like a sarcastic remark that Sukadeva is making. And then he's testing Parikshit. So then Parikshit understands, yeah, this is not the correct answer. But just like sometimes a teacher will say the wrong thing and say, yeah, isn't that correct, students? And then I have to say, no, it's wrong. Well, if you look in the nectar devotion among the 64 angas of bhakti, of course, in the 10th anga of bhakti is give respect to the aspada tree and the cow and the brahman and the vaishnava and everything else and whatever. And in the second set of 10, I think it's the 19th or 20th anga, the do nots, don't do this. One is do not disturb any living entity. So this is actually incorporated within the rules of bhakti also. So this goes along with Lord Chaitanya's order that, you know, be humbler than the bladed plants and be tolerant, etc. Give respect to all living entities. So this, of course, is part of the idea that everything belongs to Krishna. Everything is part of Krishna. Now, some of the parts of Krishna are favorable and some are unfavorable to us. So the demons and the atheists and the people like that attack the devotees, so they're not favorable in one sense. But what does Krishna do? When Krishna attacks a demon, he doesn't hate the demon. He liberates him. He puts Putna in the spiritual world. So the devotees, of course, may not be on that level, but nevertheless, we tolerate all the elements of the material world, understanding, of course, it is also Kali Yuga, and it's full of tamasic people and all sorts of misguided people. So we understand the gunas are at work, whatever. But we tolerate the situation. And as I said previously, the devotee takes heaven or hell in the same way. He doesn't desire either. He doesn't hate either. And he simply performs his bhakti anyway and tolerates that situation. It is also said in nectar devotion, the beginning among the samanya lakshanas, or the general qualities of bhakti, one is subhada. And what does subhada mean? Of course, that means literally giving auspiciousness. But then one of the meanings is that one becomes compassionate to all living entities, and the other one is all living entities become attracted to the devotee. So if we show compassion and tolerance and whatever, then we get the respect of all living entities, including the atheists and the demons and whatever. Just as Lord Chaitanya, when he went to the Jarikan forest, he was chanting and all the animals and the tigers and everything began dancing. So they had no animosity towards Lord Chaitanya because he was so joyful and he was affectionate to all living entities. Yeah. So, yes, we can start off by being tamogun, rajogun, or sattvagun, whatever. Now, there's different ways in which you can practice that bhakti. So, in the third canto, Kapila Dave describes tamogun bhakti, and rajogun bhakti, and sattvagun bhakti. None of these actually are the proper form of bhakti. Because sattvagun bhakti will be ultimately take you up to Svargaloka or something like that, and rajogun bhakti will keep you somewhere in the material world, and tamogun bhakti will elevate you slightly, but they won't give you that transcendental result that we want, prema. None of them will give that because they're contaminated. So of course we should not think that bhakti itself is tamogun or whatever, but bhakti is nirguna. But there's a covering because of the jiva's contamination that misdirects that bhakti. So the bhakti is there, that is worship of the Lord, but it is distorted because of the gunas, the effect of the gunas on these different people. So the only bhakti which will give best results is pure bhakti, uttama bhakti. So for that to operate as sadhana, we have to have proper instructions and proper knowledge. So someone in tamogun, can they practice pure bhakti? Since someone covered by tamogun. If they develop that sincerity or faith to begin with, and they get the association of devotee who can tell them the proper way, don't do this, don't do that, do this this way, and reject all the material desires, then they can begin practicing and rise above all the gunas. As Bhagavatam in the beginning says, in the story of Narada Muni, and this thing that gradually bhakti destroys all the gunas. Yeah? So that's anarjana vritti taking place. So, someone starts in tamagun, but if he gets proper association and instructions, and he has that genuine faith, then he can go beyond the gunas and practice pure bhakti. And the same for people in higher gunas as well. So, practicing pure bhakti can be done in any mode, but it would require the mercy and association of devotees. And sincerity on the person's part. So, sincerely, a person, a chandala, chants the name of the Lord once, he destroys all of his karmas, and he becomes better than a brahmana. That means all of his gunas have disappeared. He's chanting once the name of the Lord. Sincerely. So, if he actually is sincere, then he can do so much. Even one who's in the lower modes of nature. How do we form pure bhakti? We follow the instructions of Rupa Goswami in the nectar of devotion. That is that very definition. Anukulyan Krishna Anusilam. That doesn't mean we're pure, because we're starting out, in sadhana with a little faith, and then we're going through Bhajana Kriya, Anartana Vritti, Nishtaruchi, Sakti, Bhava. That whole, we're not actually pure. But we practice pure bhakti, which means that intelligently we understand that we're doing this not to get material enjoyment, not for liberation, not for our own motives. So when we're doing the bhakti, we're rejecting all these other things and we're trying to please Krishna. Now we still have contamination in the heart, but yet we understand what the object is. Whereas mixed bhakti, we actually do have explicit desires for one thing or the other. And we don't reject those desires, along with our worship of Krishna. So the sadhana in Uttama Bhakti means that we understand that these other desires pollute the bhakti and give a different result, therefore we reject them, even though we still have some contamination in the heart. So that's called pure bhakti in sadhana. We have these statements about devotees, and of course even in Prahlad's story it says 17 generations in the past and future get liberated as well. So it may be not directly, but at least because they are associated, they get agyata sukriti by somehow being related to the person, you know, as the progenitor or the result of that person, they got some agyata sukriti there. At least they have the beginnings of bhakti, which will lead them up to the highest goal eventually. So maybe not immediately in the next lifetime they get the result, but that benefit is there for them in the future, so they can and take advantage of bhakti. So once the process of bhakti is started, in general, it is never destroyed. It's not destroyed unless we do serious aparadha. So it can go on forever, increasing bhakti until we get perfection. So it may not be immediate, but once they've got that little seed of bhakti, then it will fructify and then finally take them out of the material world, the spiritual world.